Good evening, Mr. LeCates.
Good evening.
Who's conducting the workshop?
He is.
I am, I guess, and Dave.
Yeah, Mr. LeCates.
Then we have Ms. Marlena Gibson from the DSHA that will help me refer. Kind of wanted to use it to update you on some things and on MPHU. The working group has continued working as council requested after the ordinance was passed, and we came up with a lot of things we need to do. So Dave thought we, since the first one has been passed through zoning, would update you on the necessary time frames. And the first thing I want to do is bring up the you should see kind of a housing coordinator position that's been posted, and Dave and I and Denny and a couple others going to interview for three candidates Thursday. Basically, this is a dual job description between the employee that we lost and retired, and handle more of the MPHU side of it, the groundwork and work that needs to be done. There's the salary that was already in the budget for the position, but at the time we thought it, Dave, I, and Susan thought it would be better to consolidate it, and if work was slow in the MPHU program, I'd always have access with the staff to have them do some of the work that Mr. Phillips used to do with the demos, write-ups, and things like that. I brought that to your attention. I don't know if it's for discussion or just see. We do have three pretty good candidates. We started with 12 applied, I think.
What is the job description again?
It's right here. Housing coordinator, we listed as.
Oh, it's on here. Okay. On
the yeah,
okay.
Pay grade 15. Kind of because we wanted it to kind of do both. We were scared about if we just put MPHU and the program started taking longer than we thought, which from the group side, working group, we don't feel that's the case, and I will get into that in a minute. But there'll certainly be enough CDBG to pick up the slack that Mr. Phillips actually used to do, environmental, the demos, and some write-ups.
So you'll find work for this man to do, or a woman.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was the whole, and that was Susie and Dave's idea, that the funding's already in the budget. There is still half of, or a small portion of CDBG funding to pay for it. And in saying that, the rationale was, as over and over, you know, we were trying to think that maybe to go out and hire a consultant, and that was, I guess, in everybody's eyes, kind of on the expensive side, and it wouldn't be in-house. This would be an in-house person that could relieve of some meetings that it seems like more and more conferences, state, want to hear about the program. Developers are starting to get real interested again every time there's advertised in the paper. I have, Dave and I have one Monday. I have one tomorrow. A couple of them are interested in building strictly affordable housing units. So with that being said, if you want to discuss that, we'll be more than glad. So the first thing, Dave, do you want to go over the changes for the MPHU?
Why don't you go ahead and explain some of the duties and what needs to be done to set up the program and that sort of thing.
The purpose, real purpose of the meeting was to kind of let you know the, first of all, I think you handed out the items to do in the short cheat list. It's that moderate price housing unit program items to do. I have a more in-depth and a timeline that I'll also go over, that the group, Marlena and a lot of them, that we talked about and things that we saw that need to be done kind of in the next 9 months. regardless if we go back out for another RFP, because of the 400 possible units starting in the next 9 months to year, there's a lot of prep work that needs to be done on the buyer side and the developer side. The first one is the moderate price housing unit program, items to do. We've got to determine the moderate income because we would have to keep application on them and check to make sure, the same as we do community development block grants, that they're permanent residents and been employed here for at least 1 year preceding the application. Ensure that the requirements are met for the MPHUs and the development, the number of bedrooms, that they're scattered throughout when the plans start to get finalized. The covets are recorded, establishing maximum sale price, which annually that can change. Buyers' principal residence have to make sure that yearly. Resale requirements apply for 20-year control period. Annual certification for each owner of the principal residing. And after 5 years of ownership, owner of the MPA may request approval for second mortgage. Total mortgage must not exceed 90% of maximum sale price. And then the shorter side, the number, establish the MPHU agreement with the developer. That's kind of, we feel like that should be done, I think it's on here, about the next 4 months or so for the first application that's been approved. Schedule to build and market MPHU. Establish minimum sale price for each tier, for each household size in each tier. Allow debt burden for 30-year mortgage, less estimated closing costs, multiplier. That is for the resale price. And then the initial sales, legal notice, when marketing will begin, noting floor area, cost, etc. And the CDBG department will notify council of offering. CDBG department will establish the council's approval, a selection system that considers household size, lengths of residency, county employee, and multiple eligible buyers for same MPHU. So if we have a lot of, in one, say, in Elizabethtown, for they want to buy the same type unit, we would do, go with a lottery and draw for. And of course, all of this would be approved on their own financing. Once again, it's no acquisition money from the county other than my staff at the certain right now. And if they're not sold 180 days, we could release them to be sold as regular homes without MPHU requirements. County or state agencies can purchase MPHUs if there's no eligible buyer to be resold as MPHU as a later date. And then the resales during the 20-year period sell for no less than prior price paid, able to sell for 3% more per year, but not more than current maximum sale price. County would be offered MPHUs first. If county does not purchase, then council will determine approved resale price. If no eligible buyer with 90 days, then MPHU may be offered for resale at market rate. County must notify a proposed sale and issue a certificate of eligibility to new owner. Defaults and foreclosures must notify the lender. Cure the default. Purchase and resale MPHU. If property goes to foreclosure and there are excess proceeds, the county would receive them unless the control period is over. County must review ordinance after 24 months. CDBG department must maintain a list of all MPHUs. County must deny, revoke, or suspend building permits or prior site plan approvals if there is a violation of this program. So, with that being said, our timeline, and this may be a little bit repetition, but January to June, we have been getting legal advice from Mr. Griffith. He's helped us, and right now he's currently working on the covets, the necessary contracts, keeping up with projects go through ZDBC, P, and Z, and program budget, which we're still not at. July to December legal advice, agreements with developers, as was said, are probably one of the most important things, particularly for the first one, Elizabeth Town Village program regulations finalized, and then start to consider the second RFP. The 24 months will be up in April. If we think we're ready, it is a pilot program, as everybody knows. Once again, I'm starting to get a lot of calls from various developers and wanting to know when our next round would be. As I said, Dave and I are meeting with one Monday. The market's changed, and there's still a lot of interest in affordable housing, which is good news on our part, as far as I'm concerned. And then we got to start doing January to March home buyer outreach. We've got to start letting the potential home buyers know about the available units coming online or that's going to be on sale. There's workshops, application eligibility education, which will probably run April to December of 2008. January to March, ongoing workshops, first round of annual mailings, contact with eligible buyers to renew position on waiting lists, ongoing workshops, and I could go on and on, and but it's in front of you. And basically, we wanted to show, then page two is kind of what I went over, the administration and legal implication. And without the administration and us following through with the ordinance to the T, we obviously would be opening up for a lot of criticism if we didn't have the ability to stay on top of the regulations, the application process, the homeowners that make sure they're eligible every year, that they don't fall into the rental's hand or get resold and become a rental unit or something. And one thing we discussed was the homeowner counseling, try to get them to have some type of counseling before they really finalize this program. And then, of course, work with the realtors, appraisal attorney. And that repetition will be continued every round, every project.
There's quite a bit of work to do, and our goal is that the new person we hire will be able to set the program up and get it running and work with Mr. LaCates and Delaware State Housing Authority. Marlene and will help and try to get the process set up, and then we hope after that's done, we think things should go pretty smooth, and there is a continuous monitoring of the various homes and for sale and resale. So there is some work involved, and we thought that with a new employee what works directly for the county, this is a long-term commitment from the county. But that person, if there are times when that person is not that busy, it could help with Bill's work in his office in the community development office. So,
okay, got a question, Dave. On these, this one page, Bill handed out, moderately priced housing units, the items to do thing. I didn't know that we were doing just 1 year. Now you only have to be a resident here 1 year. Is that the standard?
Yes.
Okay, I thought we were talking even more than that at one time.
And you're absolutely right.
What happened? I thought we were like 3 years or something.
Taking public comments when we went to workshop and council asked us to relook at it. There were several comments that they felt that 10 years, but we were already all the way up to 10 years. We started with 3.
3 years may be excessive, but 1 year may be awful, you know, liberal on the side. But anyway, 1 year seems awful lenient on that thing. So I just question that. And the other one, on that same pamphlet you handed out, you talk about if under initial sales, if MPHUs are not sold within 100 days, then they can go up to the market price.
180.
180 days, yeah. Right. Well, are you aware of what the MLS is saying right now and what the average house on the market is today?
I know.
What is it? Do you know?
I mean, no, I don't know offhand, but I know that...
Probably about a year.
Yeah.
Right? Or if not more. So, I mean, the 180 days may be very unrealistic. I don't know. We ought to somehow tag this to such as a... Because if a developer, we'll use Elizabethtown as an example, mm-hmm. builds, let's say, let's build all a bunch of these, you know, 40, 50 of them. Market can't absorb it.
Right.
The market is the market. We're trying to tinker with the market, and yours is not going to do it. So what you'll have is a guy will build excessive amount, knowing that in 180 days he can flip a couple of them and sell them at the market price. So what he's got is the additional density and has been able to figure out this, you know, these we have in here. So maybe we ought to tag it to the MLS of Sussex County, whatever the average is. Because then we go over on the next page at the county then. If somebody wants to resell something, and we're going to be offered them first, well, I don't know why the county would ever want to buy a house. And then the council...
It would be back in the system, though, I think.
Yeah. Well, okay, but then if the council does not determine... or see, then the council would determine the approved resale price. So we're sitting here, we're all of a sudden, we're going to... We, this group, we can't even... get definitions now. We're gonna come up with sale prices.
Well, the resale price is based on the formula.
There's a formula in the ordinance that, now. 95%.
Well, it says that then the council will determine approved resale price. If no eligible buyer is within 90 days, then it can be offered to sell. And here again, 90 days. See, that's awful.
Resale.
It's awful. It's not realistic because right now you're looking at a year. The market's always changing. Maybe we ought to have some kind of indicator that goes with the market.
Well, keep in mind these are going to be below market level.
Well, so, then they shouldn't have any problem. But still,
well, that's
there's only
the
X. Okay, but there's only X a number of buyers out there, Vance, at any one time in the market buying houses. And if they bring on at Elizabethtown in the town of Milton, there's only X amount of people are going to be buying a house, whatever price. Not everybody in the rest of the county are going to flock to Milton, even if they live in Selbyville or Delmar. They're not going to just run up there anyway. So. I'm a little concerned that these are not really very realistic, and we're going to see some, messing around with them possibly, or the potential for.
I agree. I mean,
I think there ought to be some kind of better system than tagging in a number of days. Maybe, like I said, adjust it to. A lot of times we put things to the, the interest rates are going up and down or something. Why can't we put this to a tracking? That would follow the market here in Sussex County, which is, I know that the Sussex County Board of Realtors have their MLS system, and you can plug into the computer, and it'll tell you how many days.
Again, I don't think that the market is going to be the indicator of whether these sell or not, since these are going to be substantially
below. But you're a Republican.
Below.
You're not. You don't think the marketplace is the strongest? Go ahead.
I don't believe the market is going to be the indicator of whether or not these sell, since these are going to be substantially below the market. So logic would dictate that you're not really talking about the same thing. Let me finish, please.
Go ahead.
I think what could cause them to sit on, quote, the market too long is the criteria with which people would qualify.
How about the number,
and,
Vance?
And
how about
let
the
me
number?
Finish,
okay.
Mr. Cole.
All right, go ahead.
And if we find that... these units, which are substantially below the market value, are not moving, then we're going to have to look at the criteria for eligible participants. And that would be where we would need to tinker, not leaving them on the market for another 180 days.
All right. My only response is there's a thing called the absorption rate. And the absorption rate, this is moderately priced. This isn't cheap housing. This is $200,000 homes. Still, $200,000 homes in any market is
no, this is not
cheap.
$200,000 homes, Mr. Cole. There is one category that exceeds $200,000. The other 11 categories are below $200,000. So really be careful
below?
About
okay, let's see. Let me go. I'll go. I haven't looked at that chart. I was just guessing.
Yeah, that's
so let's just
a lot.
See. Oh, yeah.
They go down to 90,000.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all I'll tell you is most of they can build whatever range they want. They'll probably build a $200,000 range because they will get more profit out of that.
No, that's based on the formula that was approved when the units were approved.
What happens in Vance if a developer of Elizabethtown, we'll use that example, brings on 80 units or 50 units or 20 units at one time,
Do you really honestly think the market, no matter how good the market or how cheap it is, there's going to be that kind of absorption of that number of units in 180 days in Milton at one time?
Good question, Mr.
What do you think I'm asking? He's not.
You're asking a technical question. Mr. Lacates, is there a way that we can maybe govern the number of units that come on at any one time during this process?
So far, we have to do 15% minimum a year, and
it has to be. And they have to give you a phase-in program.
Yeah, they've got to give. And one of the things we talked about, they've got to give us a plan.
Use Elizabethtown for an example.
Right.
And give us an example of how many affordable housing units they can build in 1 year.
I think they said that they couldn't build over 200 units per year, and unless that's like you said.
I can't remember. So 20 units.
20 units.
20 plus units. 15%.
Right. So that would probably be the possibility. And I do agree with you that, you know, the whole reason I think...
So you throw, let's just say they build them pretty fast, because I've watched these guys and I've actually worked for some of these guys that I see them build them real fast. Anyway, so 20 units come on in Milton and we have 180 days to sell. It won't happen. It just won't happen. You'll have them going back to the developer and they'll go, that those homes we thought we were going to get for affordable housing, we'll see, out of the 20, we'll see, I'll bet you more than half, we'll shift back it to the developer's hands and go to market price. Because of the 180 days, we've got our hands tied.
If he's got 20 affordable units at 15%, that means he's going to have, 160 or so regular priced units or whatever that number is.
No, he's allowed to build 200 in the year. Let's
understood.
Say.
Well, I think that's
he doesn't have to build the 200.
No, no.
He could build all affordable housing.
No,
we haven't tied
no.
it.
No, he's got to give a schedule for
gotta
that.
Learn.
Okay.
I got to learn.
Okay.
You do.
And it doesn't kick in until he does the building.
It won't work. I'm telling you, you can't put these time periods in there and have it work.
Well, I
you're trying to micromanage things, and I'm surprised at you, Mr. Phillips, that you would fall for that track. Trap it being the
you've been wrong
kind of Republican
every
that you
point
claimed.
You made tonight,
well,
so it doesn't surprise
me. I am surprised.
180 days is part of the existing ordinance.
Right. Yes, it's been there the whole time.
All right. Well, I'm just
so if
where were you when we were debating?
I voted against it. You guys all voted for it. I'm just questioning what you all have done.
What I'm saying in an effort
again.
To be responsive is that if you want to change that 180 day period. This would be the good time to tell me because we're talking about other amendments.
Right.
Well, I bring it up because it's difficult to micromanage. This, in my opinion, is another clear example of trying to mess with the market. So you'll never do it. Yes.
Well, it is a pilot program. Dave's going to be discussing some other changes. It's something I believe. I think 180 days really. It's one thing's bothered me in the last how long this has been drawn out from. 2 years, too.
Maybe some thought should be put to it that we can take out the number and we plug it into, like I say, to whatever the current absorption rate is for this county and plug that in so that we know we're safe. We have a little, breathing space.
Again, there is no reason to think that a unit that is priced substantially below market value will not sell first.
Right now, nothing sells.
And the only reason that it would not be one of the first units to sell is that the criteria is too tight. So it's a matter of looking at the criteria if that moment ever comes. This is a pilot project.
Okay, but let me ask you this. What is the downside of if you left it, gave them longer time to sell the moderate price? It gives the people who need that housing more of an opportunity. It benefits them.
You're doing hypotheticals when
really no, I don't like that.
There's no need to right now. We have not even... launch the first.
We do.
I don't know. Anybody else have a problem with it? Or are you all just sitting down there like deer in headlights?
Well, in terms of the developer who's been approved.
Right.
He was approved at the time the 180 days existed.
Well, that's fine.
So I don't think you can change it as to him, but if you want to change it as to somebody who applies and comes in later, we could do that.
Now, are we doing another RFP anytime soon?
That's open for discussion.
Yeah,
I think April.
There's really no need to rush into another
no,
RFP.
No, and I'm telling everybody probably this time next year at the earliest, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we can look at how these first units move, and if
that
they're
was
not
whole,
moving, we look at the criteria. Mm-hmm.
But I do, on 180, I can understand. You know, we put a 20-year that we want to keep it affordable, and then we have that little gap where it could turn like that. I agree. We have a part of the ordinance, Mr. Phillips, what you're talking about. We can adjust the income, council can, every year to meet what we think is changed.
Here's a young lady from the housing department who's been involved in programs before. Do you find it normal that you just don't have participants, or do you normally have more participants than you can provide funds and houses for?
I think the experience of most programs around the country is they have more participants than they have houses for. I
mean, we've spent 20 minutes on a hypothetical that is probably not going to occur.
Right now, ma'am, in the real estate market in Sussex County, very little is selling at any price. Are you aware of that?
I understand.
At any price. So what makes you think that 180 days, that if they bring in 10 units in Milton, that there's going to be 10 buyers in that Milton that want to buy in Milton? You may be right in the sense that in a county, there's a lot of people want this kind of housing, but when it's all in one spot in this one big county, 180 days is a long time, a short time to be able to get anything done. I don't know why you can't get it. It gives you more flexibility if you have a longer time.
I think one of the...
Makes sense to me, just for your program.
I think one of the administrative concerns with the number of days that's allowed before a unit can be sold at market rate, I first can say that we did a lot of research with other programs around the country, and I can't think of one that was tied to a market, another rate, that they all use set number of days. And being tied to a rate that could change, I think it would be a real administrative issue if the rate was constantly changing. If in this developer's agreement it's this number of days, and another developer's agreement it's another number of days, and then as homes are being resold, in addition to looking at batches of homes coming up for sale the first time, there could then be different numbers of days applied to sale homes that are coming up one at a time. So I think that could be a big
concern. I guess it could be.
That would be an issue.
And when this person that we hire comes on board and we start, these projects start becoming reality, for lack of better words, you know, and you're putting out different information, you're going to start taking a hit list, for lack of better words, right? And you'll pretty well see, you know, how we're doing. I mean, it certainly seems like there is certainly a lot of people out there, and it depends what bracket they fall in, that, you know, that it will work. I 180 days, I mean, you've certainly done research on it, so I'm not going to question some of that, but, you know, that it might be something we need to look at, but until we put the game, put it in get play, you know, we can't sit here and debate the issue.
But is 180, you said they use a time frame, most of your research,
mm-hmm.
in 180 days is fairly average?
That's pretty standard, 180 and 90. I think the 90 is a little longer. Many.
How about the one-year residency requirement?
Actually, a lot of programs don't have as long a residency requirement. A year is actually on the long side.
A year is a long time.
Maybe we should make it 6 months.
On the issue of looking at how long it'll take to sell the units, another thing to consider is that homeowners will be coming through the application and eligibility process long before the units actually are starting to come online. Right. So there'll be an opportunity to say, wow, we don't have a lot of homeowners in line yet.
We need to regroup.
There'll be some warning flags coming up. I think there'll be an opportunity to see
but
how it
can
goes.
You then tell the developer to stop building anymore so that we don't lose units into the real market?
No, but you could work with them to look at the developer agreement and give a longer number of days that they would stay on the market before, that they would be available to MPHU buyers before reverting to market rate.
What's funny is to think that the developer is going to be anxious about jacking the price up on a unit to full market value when he can't sell it at the reduced price is not logical. I mean, he wants to get as much money back as quickly as possible. So there's no incentive for the developer to jack the price up on those if the market's dead.
The two
sense.
We're meeting with, they're talking about affordable because that is the market. I mean, if there's such a thing right now, I agree with you, George. But the reason they want to meet is because they see that as the next market in Sussex County until it changes, I think. And that's what two good developers told me. And that's why they want to meet. They want ones in Allendale wants to 200 and some units all affordable.
No, I don't just disagree with them because it's the market's telling them certain things. I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
I just don't like tagging in these numbers that, you know, just trying to micromanage.
I had a question about that 1 year. residency requirement. Maybe this is a question for Marlena. You said that, how long, after the person made the application, how long would they be in the queue waiting until they actually purchase?
Well, it would depend on how many units were coming online and when. The way the draft regulations that we started on are written, that they would have to, if they were on for more than a year, they would have to come back and do a check to make sure they were still eligible.
Mm-hmm. Make sure they haven't shifted jobs or
moved out of the county, if they're still interested.
Or history or whatever it may
be. It would also be a way to just filter the waiting list.
Can they make the application before they've lived here a year, or do they have a minimum, do they have to walk in?
Yeah.
And be a year, you should prove that they've lived here a year.
It says at the date of application, yeah, for 1 year immediately preceding date of application, have been a permanent resident. But so you, if you wanted them to be able to have some flexibility there, that could be changed.
I'm just, no, I was just curious. I didn't.
Because they may make their application and sit there for a year waiting for a unit.
Right.
So you may have somebody who 2 or 3 years in the queue before they actually find out.
It's possible, because it certainly depends on the developer and what's everything's happening.
Yeah.
I apologize for not coming in late. This we have right here, things to do. Is that some of the changes you want, or is this just some of the things?
That's just some of the
things that
Dave has the changes
from point A to point B.
Here's our feeling, and Finley, you know, and some of you. It's starting to get very overwhelming. First of all, Ms. Marlena spends probably most of her work time on technical studying other things. That's why I call her my expert. She doesn't like to speak, as you notice, in front of crowds. But you asked her to research something, and she's amazing. Been a great candidate for the job. So
is that paid announcement?
No, she wouldn't take it. She likes what she's doing. She just loves. Anyway, the whole thing, even for me, it's getting very overwhelming. I mean, you know, as I said, today, tomorrow's conference. I've been upstate 3 times to talk about the program. Everybody wants to hear about it, and everybody's sitting and waiting.
Everybody's got it, but we're the only ones that done anything.
Well, we're further ahead than anybody, you know. Florida started it, you know. It's NACO asked to do it after we had already downstairs. They recommended, and guess what? They recommended for police, nurses, teachers,
right?
And we already had that, you know, in our plan. So, I do think that's a very positive thing. So we're trying to keep staying on top of things we need to change. Not that we won't need to change some down the road. That's the whole idea of pilot proof. Tonight, I wanted to go over how hard the work can be, and as Marlena said, and maybe that go back to George, there is so many technical things in there that, yes, a good, smart attorney or developer probably could try to get around it, and if somebody's not on top of it 24/7, it could be a nightmare. So,
Do we have the ability to, if somebody's trying to do an end run, do you have the ability to stop them?
We take the permit. We don't give them a permit or stop the permit. It says it right in, you know, building permit. That is our one out.
We do have some ability.
That's how we could slow down. I don't know if that's legal, but you don't have to answer that. The process of trying to do 50 MPHUs if we're worried about we don't have enough applicants, you know, if that's possible.
I think the bottom line tonight is we need to get, I mean, do we have money in the budget for a person to come on board so we can, like, get this person? Because it's going to take a while to get up and running, like you said, Bill, and we've talked about this before, that we need to get this person on board, make sure she knows as much as she possibly can, to kind of take that burden and make a whole other division under you so they can solve the problems and go to the meetings and let you do what you're supposed to be doing.
Grow with the program, because it is new and they can grow. And you know. And Dave has some new ordinance update changes that we would like to go over.
That's the old one. That's the current one.
A new one?
Well, you have, letter.
Yeah.
It's 8.5 by 11 sheets.
Okay. And that would be
He's on the work part now. The advisory committee has recommended a few changes at this point in time to the ordinance, and just to go over them very quickly, it the first, on the first page of this, they asked to take out a section there allowing qualified projects to fully utilize the density. That won't change, but it's covered in another section. And then there are different sections in the ordinance that refer to the county council approving different things, like the department definition of a department designated entity, which would include like different agencies and whatnot. And some of these have been changed, or if you agreed to this, some of these would be changed to the administrator, so that each time there's an administrative type concern, that the county council doesn't have to address it itself. And then on the second page, under B, qualifying land, the current definition would be expanded to allow land not only in town center, development area, et cetera, but land that is designated on a town's comprehensive plan as lying within the town's growth and future annexation area. So it broadens that up, which was a concern with the Seacoast application. And then minimum standards for eligibility for buyers. It changes the county council to the administrator, which would give some flexibility with eligibility requirements for applicants. And then on B2 under 72.7, the project entering the MPHU program would be allowed to utilize the density permitted by the zoning district in which the property is located, but it would not exceed 12 units per acre. So the full density would be allowed, but the total density in this case would not exceed 12 units per acre. And then under 72.8J, there's some clarification there. The MPHU units shall not be substantially different in appearance from non-MPHU units, and they are part of a phased development, or when they are part of a phased development, a proportionate number, percentage of said units shall be placed within each phase. So when the developments are phased in, they have to phase in the MPHU units also. On page 3, there's a suggested change regarding second mortgages, that second mortgages must be approved prior to the MPHU unit being made a MPH unit. And then on the last page, the county administrator in cooperation with the county attorney shall develop and approve standard set of agreements and documents, et cetera, as part to implement the ordinance. So those were some proposed changes that were recommended by the advisory committee that worked so hard to put the whole thing together.
Looks like a power grab by the county administrator, this whole document.
Not really.
Every time I saw council across that, and then administrator was put in.
They understand we'll probably screw it up, so that's why.
Your days are over.
The idea was to, and I think I asked Marlena about this, the idea was to try to not have the county council have to decide on administrative type concerns.
For example, the draft policies and procedures for the program are about 30 pages. It's full of lots of minutia, and that, as the ordinance is currently written, that's something that council would have to approve. And so we just felt that it would probably be burdensome for you to go through it all, and we wouldn't want to put you in the position of having to approve every small change down the line.
All right. Are you going to go ahead and get Jim to make these changes?
I have prepared that, but tonight, if any of you have any suggestions or additional changes, it would be helpful to know that so we can put it in final form.
Certainly, so we don't have to do it 15 times, right?
Right.
I understand.
Such as this 180-day period or the residency, period of residency prior to application.
Well, the 180 days, it doesn't say that they will be sold. It just says that they could be. But that's the discretion of the CBDG, isn't it? I mean, that's not something that is mandatory. I mean, 180 days, 181 days, and boom, you're back in to the regular housing.
Well, it says, let's see, that if you want them to have the ability to make that period longer, we might want to play with that language a little bit.
Again, I think we've got a pilot project in place. We should ride it through. The expert has said that's a pretty much an average number, so we ought to just stick with it for now and see how it turns out. And
I think it's a little short in today's market, but I think you made a very good point, Mr. Phillips, where you said, you know, if their houses aren't selling, then these won't be selling either. So, you know, why would you want to take a house for $175,000 and sell it for $300,000?
It's not logical.
It's not logical. So I see your point, and I agree with it.
And I would want to point out that everybody's talking about this market. I mean, in September, $120 million worth of property transferred in this county. So I don't really see where it's all doom and gloom out there.
No, things are turning around.
What we could do is put it on the agenda for next week, just for introduction, if you'd like. Okay.
Yep, got like a winner.
Okay.
Nice.
Thank
you.
Stock market will be up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming down. Okay. We'll get into the real business. You all received a copy of the agenda. We will be deleting number 3 under Mr. Izzo, treatment and disposal alternatives for the Wolf Neck inland bays. That it will be deleted. And I think that's all that I have. Anybody else have any other?
The only one we have is Rob Davis will be replacing John Ashman under the first item on the second page, Prince George's Acres.
Any other changes? I need a motion to approve the amended agenda.
No move.
Second.
I have a motion, Mr. Jones, second, Mr. Phillips, to approve the agenda as amended. Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried. Approval of the agenda for September the 11th. Any additions or corrections? Minutes, yes.
Working on a lot of pressure.
I was looking right at him and said agenda.
I've already got two ready for you for next week.
Oh,
good. Any corrections or additions to September the 11th?
Some of
them. Have a motion, Mr. Jones, seconded by Mr. Phillips to approve the agenda for the minutes for September the 11th. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried. Correspondence, Mr. Griffin?
A letter from the Milford Community Band to Mr. Jones, thanking him for a contribution and basically saying that they don't collect dues from their band members, so this contribution is very much appreciated. Letter from the city of Rehoboth thanking Councilman Jones for a donation of $250 for the performance of the Dell State University Marching Band during the summer concert series. A letter from Gail Keane, chairperson of the Stokely Stride, thanking council for supporting purchasing a corporate sponsorship for that event and telling that there were 106 people that participated and over 96 volunteers, and there's a booklet here about it if you'd like to look at it. All the correspondence.
Any other correspondence, members of the council? Seeing none, Mr. Baker?
The first item I have is possible state legislation relating to overlay zones, and as we discussed last week, I'm handing out a copy again of the same proposed legislation. This legislation would clarify and enhance the county's ability to establish overlay zoning within zoning districts. It has been reviewed by Mr. Lank and Mr. Griffin. It does reflect current county zoning practice. I have been told by representatives from Kent County and Newcastle County that they are in support of it.
I guess they are.
Yeah. So if looking at the proposed legislation on the third page, line 64, the county government, this would enable the county government to divide the territory of the county into districts or zones of such number, shape, or area as it may determine, or within such districts or zones may regulate the erection, construction, reconstruction, alteration, uses of building and structure, and the uses of the land. And then in the next section, would allow additional classifications to be made within any district to regulate, restrict, or prohibit uses, structures, etc. And then on the next page, says the county government would provide for the manner in which the regulations would be enforced. So, again, this would be enabling type legislation. I don't know if Mr. Griffin would like to make a comment. Or?
This legislation is likely to be pushed if the state Supreme Court should uphold Chancellor Chandler's decision in the Farmers for Fairness case. That case was appealed to the Supreme Court. Briefs have been filed, and I think it's set for argument on December 14th. So probably by end of January, middle of February, a decision will be issued by the court. If the court should overturn that decision, there may not be a need for this legislation. But if the court upholds that decision, it's likely that there will be a need for this legislation. In his decision, Chancellor Chandler said that state law is vague regarding the authority of any county where it comes to zones, not districts. It's pretty clear that we have the ability to divide into districts, and that's what we've done. But for things such as your environmentally sensitive developing area and the combined highway corridor overlay zone, those are not subject to challenge because they happen more than 60 days prior to his decision. Right. But in the future, if you should choose to do something like that going forward, unless you have some change in the state law, there can be some fairly burdensome requirements.
So we could, if we had the ability to do overlays in the future, and we felt like there was an area that was appropriate for 100-foot tall buildings, we could carte blanche do an entire area as an overlay zone, and that right could be given across the board.
Well, the way the zones have happened in the past is that the overlay zones are smaller components of a larger zoning district.
Right.
And you could do that.
Or higher density, instead of rezoning, we could do an overlay that would provide for a certain pocket in this county to have high density.
It would be possible, depending on how that the wording used to create that. Now, with your zoning districts, the law says that all regulations within the district must be uniform in the way they apply to housing types, of a similar housing types. The problem the court had with what happened in Kent County is that they created a Zone A and a Zone B. A was from 1 to 9, and B was from 9 to the bay. In one of those, you had to have 5 acres for one house, and another one, you had to have 10 acres for one house. To be east of one of those, you could have a house. I forget whether it was east or west. But
I guess the point is, it was just arbitrary and capricious the way they decided this. Was there any logic in how they chose those areas?
Well,
is that what the court
where
said?
They ran afoul, where they ran afoul of state law is that he said that he didn't find any authority to create a zone within a district that treated houses different within that zone.
I see.
And they had different acreage requirements, even though you're still talking about a house with the same footprint, depending on whether it was an A or B. And he said you can't do that. And under districts, because in districts, everything's got to be uniform.
So they just, the legislation that Kent County had that they were working under didn't permit this, because it was...
Well,
just,
it's the state law.
Right, state law didn't permit it. Right, that's all. It just was vague is what he said. It didn't say they couldn't do what they wanted to do. It meant they came back now, and they've had to get the enabling legislation or rewrite it or do something, get this ability to do these overlays.
The state law does mention districts and zones, but it makes it clear that if a county decides to divide into districts, which we did, that everything within each district has to be, you can't have different treatment for different housing types within the same
district. So would you say then the challenge from the disgruntled people with what Kent County did was basically they won on a technicality, basically?
Well, pretty much.
Right,
there was a big hole in state law that didn't exist to let them do what they tried to do.
Right.
Probably if they didn't land grab, they wouldn't have had to worry anyway. But, I guess, what is it different than what we can do now? I mean, I know we have overlay zones, and I know that the ruling said that anything prior to that, they couldn't touch.
You couldn't have an overlay zone under this Chancery Court decision without...
Unless somebody took you to court, right?
Well, what he said in that decision is that if you were to create one, you would have to determine every property that could be potentially affected by that one way or the other and notify every one of them. And it was going to be a huge notice requirement.
Right.
Well, there's probably nothing wrong with notifying people if we're going to make some kind of a decision.
They did go through a hearing process, Vance.
But they weren't notified.
No.
Well, to give you an example, I mean, you know, we hold public hearings, but we don't notify everybody who might...
Yes,
be potentially affected or who may want to object to it.
Wait,
but we're talking two different things. One is objecting to someone else's property change versus, in this case,
your own
property being changed. I think the least we can do is notify somebody if we're planning on making some kind of a change in the way they can use their property. That's mm-hmm. certainly not
But here in this county, we don't, by law, we're not required to notify like Lawrence does at planning zoning, everybody within 200 feet. The only requirement is you have to do it in a newspaper or some public forum like that. That's all. So what the Kent County did is they went through the process like they've always done, but the court said, no, you needed to notify everybody. So there was just, it was a technicality. It's not about the, you know,
but what the issue about that zoning difference within the zone,
yeah,
because they tried to make 5-acre and 10-hour plots, which probably were 1-acre plots. And
if it's just a matter of us notifying everybody that is in an overlay zone that would be affected, I think, we can afford $500 in postage.
That's not in the future. If you ever wanted to do another overlay zone, and we have a couple now, the authority doesn't exist in state law to do that.
Even do it, right.
Even with the notification that you suggested?
Well, that was a totally different issue. He was just saying even if they had done it right, called it a district rather than an overlay zone. But what he was saying, in his opinion, at page 11, he said, to be candid, I invite the legislature to address this issue. And he essentially is asking the legislature to
clear it up. Right, right.
Because the court can only interpret the laws as they exist.
And
if you were going to do, an example would be if you were going to do a historic district overlay zone under... Essentially, right now, if you were going to try to do that, it's possible to do it, but you'd have to identify every property that could be affected by that and pull a tax map number and notify every one of those people. A
couple clicks on a computer.
Well, it might be more than that. I mean, maybe that's not a good example, but...
The Route 1 corridor overlay, Vance, would involve... How many people live in that Route 1 corridor overlay problem?
When is it too much to ask a government to notify a citizen that's being affected in a way that could change the equity they have in their property hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of the issue, but he said if you want to create overlay zones at all, there should state law should specifically talk about that. Because when you create overlays, you allow the property that's affected by the overlay to be treated differently than properties around it.
He said
you can't do that. It's got to be treated the same.
I don't want to create state law or encourage the creation of state law that will take away the requirement of a government to notify citizens if their property is going to be affected.
That's not the
issue. That's
just a minor thing.
If you read this, there's nothing in this existing about who you notify.
Well, I think what you said was Butte County didn't notify those people, and had that law been in place, what they did would have been legal. And I don't want...
No, it's more than that.
Just one fat...
They tried to do it as an overlay zone without legs under state law that allowed it. And secondly, even if they had had that legislation, he was essentially saying that there would have been a big notice requirement.
Almost seems like we need to wait to hear what the court has to say about this in January.
I would certainly think you're...
Well, I mean, saying that this may be a good thing is I think Dave wanted some answer because the counties were getting together and trying to be proactive.
It's just because it's the ability, if state law would adopt this, then we all have the ability to do, create overlays, right?
Well, it gives you more flexibility.
I mean, this is another tool in our...
Bring up till Thursday night.
In our toolbox.
Thursday night?
This Thursday. Right?
Yeah, it's Thursday.
Didn't we say last Tuesday we weren't going to do anything that we had tracking?
That's right.
No, not on this. That was on the other issue.
Oh, okay.
Was it this?
It was this.
I mean, I understand that there's certainly the other two county administrators are pushing this issue. Is that right, Dave?
No, we didn't.
They seem to have the favorable vote of to be able to ask for this legislation.
Yeah,
they've indicated they're both in support.
That was the other issue.
And you'd like an idea of whether we want to say, yes, we're on board, or no, we're not, or we want to look at it, basically, huh?
Right.
Well, why wouldn't we want to do that? Have the ability to create overlays?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I think it's questionable if it's until after January when they make a decision whether we even have to do this. Is that right, Jim? I mean, it could be. I mean, if the judge says...
It's probably a long shot that the decision will be overturned.
Right.
I mean, it seemed to be a well-reasoned opinion. It was 26 pages. You probably, if you want to take a look at it, we can...
Absolutely not.
It's very...
I think Jim is
very involved.
As confused as you've got them all today, I think we better have a workshop on that.
Or at least wait till Thursday night.
Well, it would be a...
I don't want to put you in the spot, Dave, but I mean... I'd certainly like to hear what their version is. I'd like to look at it, and see what the big deal is. I mean, I'd like to defer, but I mean, that's me.
Well, let's wait. Why not wait till the judge's decision? I mean, you know.
But Dale, what's wrong with this? We want the ability to do it. This legislation would give us the ability to do it.
We might already have that ability. If the judge is overturned,
we have it both ways.
Laws. You want more laws.
More laws. You relate.
I tell you what.
Make a law. Make a new regulation.
You're all clueless.
I have a motion to defer by Mr. Jones, seconded by Mr. Rogers. Defer to when? In a different time? Just, all right. The motion was to defer. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion
is carried. We're all having to defer.
Thank you.